So hello everyone, I would like to welcome you to the October edition of the ABCD GIS seminar here at Harvard. My name is Jeff Blossom. I'm with the Center for Geographic Analysis, or CGA as we call ourselves. And before I introduce our speaker, why don't we go around the room and just tell us who you are and what group you're with. Maybe we'll start with you and go this way.
Hi everyone. Student over at GSD at the Design School, and I'm studying landscape architecture. So very interested in hearing what you have to say.
Yeah. I'm Aki. I'm a visiting scholar at the Center for Geographic Analysis from the University of Tokyo, Japan.
Hi, I am Yuting Chen. I'm a visiting student here from Hong Kong in CGA, and now my major is the
virtual geographic environment and big data analysis.
Hi, my name is Sal,
and
postdoctor at CGA.
My name is Ben Ling. I'm a visiting scholar at QSS, and I'm working on a Chinese history and digital humanity project. So I'm interested in the geo-related works. Thank you.
Very good.
I'm Ben Lewis. I'm also with CGA.
Wendy Guan, CGA.
Hello, I'm Liu Yuo. I'm from Zhejiang University in China. I'm also a visiting scholar in IQSS CBDB project with the leader of Professor Peter Bao. And I'm here, my focus is in digital humanity and Buddhism. So I like to hear your the views of CGA. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Yingying Li. I'm a doctor of a design student and graduating very soon in November. I have some experience of spatial analysis. I'm very interested in your topic. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, thank you for that, everyone. Today we have with us Dr. Wei Lo. He is a research associate at the Computational Health Informatics Program at Boston Children's Hospital at Harvard Medical School, and an associate with us here at the Center for Geographic Analysis. He has broad training backgrounds in geography, public health, computer science, and network science. He proposed a new research area, geosocial visual analytics, which aims to integrate spatial analysis, social network analysis, and machine learning into visual analytics environments. So with that, why don't you please join me in welcoming Dr. Lo.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for Jeff's introduction, and thanks for everyone, and good afternoon. Thanks for coming. And in today's talk, I'm going to first briefly introduce some of the projects I use to lead, and then I'm going to focus more my time on just one project in which I propose a new disease control approach. And so here is that outline. And first of all, I want to introduce what is geovisual analytics, because I'm from this background. A lot of the research I'm going to introduce briefly is all, you know, in this area. So what is geovisual analytics? So visual analytics is defined as this science of analytical reasoning facilitated by this interactive visual interfaces. And the geovisual analytics focus on this visual interface and to the information containing a geospatial component. So here is one example, and this interface is what we call the geovisual analytics, and the users can interact with this interface. And the front end is the visual representations, and the back end is a computational approach, like the different spatial statistics data mining approach. And the users can interact with this interface to develop, like the, you know, to do the data explorations, to develop some hypotheses based on your, you know, data exploration. And also these tools also integrate the different predictive models, so you can do some prediction analysis. And all of the information you learn from your data exploration and also the predictive analysis, and can be used to support this decision making. And this kind of interface, I believe, you know, you may see a lot from the movies, something like that. So that's kind of this idea. So the general idea to involve the humans into this analytical process. So we all, our hypothesis is that the computational approach like AI we always talk about can do maybe 80% things. But we still need the humans to drive it. Now humans, the cognitive decision-making abilities can do another 25%, 20%. So the idea is to integrate that the power from both human sides and the computational sides. Okay, and here is what I, based on this geovisual analytics, I propose a new research area I call the geosocial visual analytics. And the front end will be all of those different visual representations, and the back end will be the different analytical approach, and have different component like the spatial part, social network part, network part, and this the multi-dimensional attribute part. So the front end, like the each map here, have the different regions. And you can from that views, you can see the spatial relationships. And here is you can see the each node here represents different regions. And so from the network views, you can see how the each regions interact with each other. For example, could it be the immigrations among different states. And in the following example, you will see like international trade among different countries. And each regions also have their own attributes. Like maybe like the income, something like that, and the population. And then all of those views are linked, which means when you highlight their corresponding nodes and their corresponding countries, and also their corresponding attributes will also be highlighted. So in this way, the users can explore their data from the different perspectives. And then based on this framework, I developed the different tools for different purpose. So this tool says what I developed, I call the geosocial app, which allow users to explore this spatial relationship and the social network relationship at the geographical region level. And here I use the international trade and data, and here is a map. And each node here represents the each country, and the link represents our trade relationships. And then you can also easily to say this is implement like hierarchical representations, implement clustering approach, so which can identify the clusters based on their trade relationships. And then you can easily to say if I highlight one group, their corresponding group nodes also be highlighted, and their corresponding countries also be highlighted here. So you can easily say, okay, this is more like the developing countries. The other group is developed countries. So based on these tools, you can easily to identify some spatial and social network patterns. And then you can develop some hypotheses and do some analysis following up. So that's general about this paper, this tool about. And then the next one is I build these tools at the individual level, geosocial relationship at the individual level. And here it's so each dot here represents that the so let us yeah each dot here represents the two individuals have the interactions and which represent the human interaction data. And in these tools I implement that as a new disease control approach I proposed, and I'm going to discuss that in detail. But this general idea is that these tools allow users to explore how humans interact with each other. For example, if in this classroom, if one person has been infected with influenza, so we have the chance to transmit with this disease to each other. But this idea is to how could we identify how humans interact with each other. Based on these patterns, we can design some effective disease control approach. And so this to allow users to explore the human interaction pattern and also use this design panels to design different control scenarios. And then to also implement the agent-based epidemic modeling. So users can see whether the new disease control approach proposed will be effective or not. So I'm going to talk about this, the new disease control approach in the in detail and later. So, and since this is another visual analytic tool I developed, so which is called a global change assessment model. So the IPCC also use these models to, you know, to see how the policy and can change and the climate change in the future. But we also know all of those models is kind of like a black box. You know, it's very hard to know what's really happening within these models. So this is the goal. We develop these tools which allow users to explore the uncertainty within these models, and then to know whether we can, you know, whether this how could we, you know, trust this how could we understand what really happening within the models. So so this is a project one of the major projects I'm working on since I came to join the CHIP. And so the goal here is that we want to understand that we want to predict the dengue and at the real time, you know, to dengue outbreak. For example, let us say if next year, if we have a lot of vaccines, one company has a lot of vaccines for the dengue, but we have no idea to say, you know, which location in the world we should target. So this is the goal for us, is to, we use the different models to make these predictions. And the one model we develop is a kind of weather model, and which can make the predictions 6 months ahead of time to say whether these locations can have the disease outbreak or not. And we also integrate some multiple other data like the internet search, and also the official health reports, and even the news event, all of those things to predict. These models we can use that to predict like the 8 weeks to the 4 months ahead. And so this is give you a, you know, general idea how this model works. Like the this green shape represents the dengue incidence, and then these lines represents the predictions. And so this means so far we only know that all of the data information we have is here. And then these lines represents, you know, we predict, you know, 4 weeks or 8 weeks ahead. So we can say that the, you know, our models can, you know, really do a, you know, very good job ahead of time to predict the to predict the disease outbreak. So this is still ongoing project. And so here I developed this, the, you know, visual analytical tools to support this whole analytical process, and which starts at the, you know, data explorations, develop some hypotheses, so users can to say, okay, we click the different location in Brazil and to see how dengue, you know, historical data about the dengue and over time, and these two views represents like the, you know, each line here represents that the, you know, different years, and the X represents epidemic weeks. So user easily to say, okay, you know, which weeks and which years you have the more, you know, disease outbreak, something like that. And here is, I integrate that the, you know, predictions and the predictions, our prediction results within our models. Within this visual analytical tools. So users, let us say if the public officials, you know, they can play with these tools and then to say how disease outbreak change our prediction results. So this is historical data, but you can see this red line is we predict that the 4 weeks ahead or 8 weeks ahead. So yeah, and this is another predictions we use to say this is start from the no outbreaks and the outbreaks. And so this is a kind of this is a 6 weeks prediction ahead of time. So users can easily to say, okay, wait, let me play it again. And yeah, when you can see that when the mouse goes here, you can easily to say how that really changed. Okay, so that means when the data, we assume our data is here, and all the data we only collect here, and then you can predict over time, you can predict how the, you know, in the next 6 months, are you going to have a disease outbreak or not?
So is that for the prediction is for the whole Africa or?
No, this is for each city.
For each city?
Yeah. Well, it depends on which city you click.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, the idea, again, this is ongoing project. Our goal here is that to integrate these models with our visual analytic environment to facilitate the users to develop the hypothesis to explore that the signals, because we have different data source. Whether, maybe we can find like Twitter data or the Google search data, have the signals and to help us to make prediction. And also the users can use these tools, public health official can use these tools to know, the disease, to make predictions for the dengue outbreak. So this is another project is to, because the US already approved that HIV self-testing, so we developed this model to say, what is the best way to target, which group of people we need to target, or how are we going to distribute this HIV self-test to help that control the HIV and outbreaks. So we did some surveys to collect that the sexual networks. In the two cities, one is Atlanta, the other is Seattle. And then we build these networks and build the agent-based epidemic models to say, to understand, to identify the effective strategies for the HIV self-testing. That's another one's, another ongoing project. I'm also looking for that. I think they have a strong spatial component, and it's a high spatial resolution health data in Africa. It's from the, the raster data and the five times 5 kilometers, and from the 2000 to 2011, and have different HIV, malaria, all of those things. So, it involves, I believe there are many kind of spatial analysis you can do here, and also involves, research questions from spatial perspective and also computational challenge. So I'm looking forward, everyone, who want to join, who want to work on this data together, I'm happy with that. And the last one before I move to that, that major topic is that it's also about international trade data, and we use the self-organizing map to learn the patterns from that all of the trade data from the in the past 100 years. So we kind of put all of the data into the self-organizing map to learn, what patterns the all of those countries have, with all other countries in the world in the past 100 years. So you can think all of the these red lines. So each cells can be one pattern they learn from that international trade data. And if some line lies here, so which means they have a kind of very low trade amount or trade volumes with all other countries. And if the patterns like this, which means that they have the relatively or very high, trading patterns with all other countries in the world. So we can easily to say that this animation represents each countries. How each countries, you can see that's a year. Sorry, it's very fast for this one, it's not good. But you can see that for different countries and how their trade patterns change over time. And another one, maybe it's, the next one, maybe it's, I put this animation a little bit slower. It's easy to see. And this one is, let us assume that the background is that the SOM image you just saw, and it's that trading the pattern positions, and then you can easily to say that so here each represents each countries, and the colors by the same continent, and this is the years. So you can easily to say how each countries their trajectory and the change over time, and when you go to like the end of the 2014, you were easily to say that you know, the countries from the same continent and the go to the totally different directions. Yeah, you can very little tell that the, you know, there are some very distinct that continent patterns, but also you also can say there are some, you know, mixed patterns you will find, okay, because they may have the geographic closeness, you know, even they are from the different continents, and also they may have the same, you know, political and historical backgrounds, language, similar language, all of those intriguing patterns you can then easily to say from these results. And so now let me move to that, the one, you know, this new disease control approach I proposed. So I'm going to talk about this in detail. For the previous ones, I want to just give everyone the big picture. If you are interested in any topic, or you know, we can discuss the each individual project in detail. So here it's the new disease control approach I proposed. And as we all know that the infectious disease has threatened our society through the entire human history, and especially in the past two decades, that an increasing population density and human movement make those diseases such as SARS, H1N1 even harder to predict, and even harder to predict and control. So the fundamental approach, fundamental question is that how could we control these diseases, especially at the source, more effective? And so first I want to introduce what is the current disease control approach from the public health officials, and then to propose the new control approach. And the first one is called the contact tracing, so which aims to identify the individuals who have the contact with these infected cases. And then you can follow with all of those contacts and treat them with different control measures, like the isolation, vaccination. But the problem is that this is a very, you know, resource intensive process, even if you only have to follow a few cases, right? But let us imagine if you have to follow up with the millions or at least thousands, millions of individuals. That's kind of the practically impossible. And so the second approach called the ring prophylaxis, which is kind of geographical approach. So after we identify the these locations have the, you know, infections, and then we can draw like the 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers circle to say I'm going to target the individuals within these circles. And the good thing for this approach, you know, at least this approach is easier to implement. But the problem is this approach has some limitations. First one is how could we determine an appropriate containment size? So for example, if you are in the urban areas, you may have to set up this containment size relatively large, right? But if you are in the, because of high population density and also movement, but in the rural areas, you may only need to set up this you know, containment areas relatively small. So the problem is here is that you know, only based on the geographic distance, it's very hard to capture, you know, the human movement and the human, you know, distribution, population distributions, like a spatial heterogeneity. So but the, you know, the above two approaches have their own, you know, advantages and disadvantages, but they both can capture two important aspects about the human movement and disease transmission. One is the social part, like the disease transmitted from one individual to another, and this approach can capture the spatial part, like the, you know, long distance or short distance. And so the approach I'm going to propose is going to kind of capture the, you know, the advantage from both sides and try to, you know, reduce the limitations. And so the overarching goal is to develop the theory and the methodology to contain this airborne disease and transmission from a geosocial both perspective. So in order to achieve this goal, I have two research objectives. The first one is to propose this theoretical framework about this disease control, and then implement this into the real case study. But actually, as I've just mentioned, I also implement this in that high school tools, if you still remember. That one is one case study, this is another one. And so first I want to introduce, what a kind of agent-based epidemic modeling. So it's based on human interaction network. Each node here represents that each individual, and the links here represent a potential disease transmission channels. For example, like also in this classroom, if one individual has been infected, they have a chance to transmit with other individuals within this classroom. And here it's like the simulated process about this disease transmission. And each individual here is still the susceptible individuals, blue represent that. And then you just assume they have some links among each other. And then if one individual has been infected, he has a chance to transmit this influenza to all other susceptible individuals within this group. And then after several days, the people will become recovered. So this is general idea to see how this agent-based epidemic modeling works. And now let me introduce that the disease control approach I proposed. And so let us say the first one is the contact tracing. And so each node here also represents each individual, and the red indicates that person has been infected. So what is how this contact tracing goes? How contact tracing is identify the individuals who have the direct contact with the infected cases. And then you can treat those individuals with different control measures in order to stop disease transmission. And so what is the ring prophylaxis? And the ring prophylaxis is first identifies the infected locations and then treats the other locations within that the 5 or 10 kilometers boundaries. And so in this case, we can easily to say, because this location and this location has a shorter geographic distance, so they are going to target at those locations first to treat the individuals within those locations for the disease control. But in this case, we can easily to say, even if location one and location three are not closer to each other geographically, but they have more this human interactions. So that's where this geosocial approach comes from. Like, first of all, we identify the infected locations and then trace all other locations which have the most interactions with those locations, and then treat the individuals within those locations first. So it's kind of based on the population movement and the population flow rather than the geographic distance itself. And so what is at least what a theoretical advantage about this approach? So the first one is, I think even based on our human knowledge, that it is easier to target at the critical locations rather than the individuals, right? The infected locations rather than individuals. And the second one is it is infeasible to capture all of the contacts of the infections. But the information to estimate the population flows among different locations are widely available, like the Twitter, like the travel survey, and also airport, airflight, all of those information bus. And so this approach can capture the both that the interactions between the spatial and the social relationships among individuals that can determine how disease transmits. And now let me move to that the real case study to see whether this new approach are effective with this study or not. And so here is that data. So this data is human interaction and mobility data in an urbanized area. It's in the, at Portland, and there are locations and different locations. And how this data drawer looks like, this is at the theoretical framework. So each small node here represents the each individual, and the big circles represent the contacts. And also you can see, because each individual, let us say, each individual like us, during the daytime, we go to the workplace. So we go to the workplace here. We have the potential to connect with that as our coworkers, and then during the nighttime we go back to home, and then we may have the contact with our family members, and also the pastime we may go to the market, all of those things, and so this represents that each individuals have their location informations, and also at a different time periods. And also they connected their contacts with their with different peoples at different time periods. And this is a summary about the information. So the total population is more than 1 million, and the total contacts is about 20 million. And the total location is also the 1 million, and the total flows is 6 million. And now, so what is the challenges here? So first challenge is that the we know that human interaction patterns in the urban environments are characterized by this very complex human population distribution and also movement. The second one is that the massive interactions with the millions of locations are and also connections make the network analysis and modeling very challenging. And so the two research questions I'm going to address here is one is that how does this spatial heterogeneous population distributions and movement will impact this new disease control approach effectiveness? And the second one is how does that the size of the containment areas can impact this control effectiveness? And so the method here, this is the framework. The first one is that we have the individual level social network, and then based on this network, we build another layer about the population network. So each node represents a location and the links among different locations, the population flows, how both locations interact with each other based on their population. And then based on this locational-based network, I implement that the disease control approach as proposed to identify the identify the infection locations, and then trace all other locations which have the most interactions with these infected locations, and then target at those locations first. And then after I propose this disease control approach, I need to do the modeling to simulate whether this new proposed control approach is effective or not. So I use agent-based epidemic modeling and also calculate some network matters. And so we implement this in the parallel computing, because if we implement with one computer, there's no way we can calculate that. So you can say just calculate this network matters. It will take the 30 hours and for the 40 computing nodes and also the 8 cores. So if we only use one computer, it will maybe take 1 year to get results back. So similar, because for all the agent-based epidemic models, we need to simulate the control scenarios for each control scenario, we simulate that for the 10,000 times, so to reduce that randomness. So for both of them, yeah, we need a lot of computational power. And so here is the influenza parameters. So it involves like the influenza. It involves that less exposed period, and also infectious period, and also reproduction rate. And then based on the reproduction rate, we infect that infection probability. Like if I meet you, and what's the likelihood I can transmit a disease to you? And then let us move to the control scenario parameters. And so we implement different vaccination strategies. One, the random based, which means I random distribute my vaccines to the population. And the degree based means I calculate the, you know, like the example here is that after I know this person has been, we identify the individual who have the more neighbors, which define that high degree. And then, which means we are going to rank all of those nodes based on the number of the links and neighbors, and then target at individuals who have the most links first, right? And the betweenness, the high betweenness usually is like the connected, the different communities. So we can imagine if we vaccinate this person, so the disease maybe can only transmit within this group. So it's kind of cut the, you know, transmission channels. So, and so this is about the different vaccination strategy. The second one is initial infection locations. And the first one is that we distribute the first we involve the first infections within the population. We identify different locations. The first have different scenarios. One is we assign the persons as an infection within a kind of low population density areas, and the median and high in the first order of the geographic neighbor location. What does that mean is here. And assume each node here represents a location. And then if one individual within this location has been infected, and then I'm going to search and all other locations, the first round, like that's what I call first order, at the first direct connected locations, I'm going to search all of them and then count all the population within all of those locations. If this equal to like the around 1,000, I think it's kind of the, this first infections is in a low population, low density population locations. And if it's the population, the total population here is around like 10,000, I think that's, you know, kind of the first infections are in the high population density areas. And then I also adjust the containment areas. What does that mean? I say, okay, assume I already know the first infection locations. I'm going to distribute my vaccines within these areas. And then this is the second order. So I'm going to change, you know, enlarge that is the containment areas, and then to distribute my vaccines to see how this the size of containment areas will impact the, you know, the control efficiency. And then the number of the vaccines from the 20,000 to the 200,000, and with an increment of that 20,000. And then you can see how many simulations we have. So that's why we really need like the, you know, HPC to implement that. And so how I'm going to measure that this control is effective or not? There are two control measures. One is that if we argue, you know, the new disease control approach is more effective, which means it is supposed to yield the same numbers of vaccines can cause a lower number of infections, right? And the second one is how it's from the geographical perspective, how well we can contain the epidemic locally, which means if we identify, like here, if I'm going to distribute vaccines within these areas, so how well we can contain the disease outbreak within these areas. That means there's no outbreaks outside of these containment areas. Okay, so let us see the results. And this one shows that the local containment efficiency with the median population density scenario, because there are tons of the figures. So here I just pick one. For all other, like the low population areas and the high population areas, they have the similar patterns. And so each figures here represents the, you know, so this one is about the second level of containment areas, and this third is enlarged that containment areas to distribute vaccines.
this is fourth, this is fifth levels. And X here represents the number of the vaccines we use. And the Y represents the total number of the infections. And each line here represents a different vaccination strategies, random, degree-based, and between-based. So we can easily to say, with an increasing number of the vaccines, the total number of infections decreases. I think that makes sense, right? And also, like a degree-based and between-based, it can do a better job than a random strategy. And we can also say, with an increase in containment areas, how that pattern changes. So we can say if we increase the containment areas, the control efficiencies will decrease. When you go to this level and this level, there's no big differences. And so this is a different control measures. It's called how success we can contain the disease within our containment areas. And this is the same. And everything is same except that the Y represents the local containment failure rates, which means that after we identify the control areas here, after we distribute vaccines, because we run that for 10,000 times each simulation. So how many times the disease, we found the disease occur outside of these bounding areas. So what that means the local containment failures. So we can easily to say also with an increasing number of vaccines, the failures for the local containment rates really decreases. And similar idea here, if we continue to increase this containment areas, this control rates really decreases. And here it shows you that initial locations impact the results, because we know that I assign that the infections at the low population density areas and the median and the high. So how that really impact the results. And so four figures still represent that continue to increase the containment areas. And so the X still represent number of vaccines. Y represent also this local containment failure rates. And each lines here represents that is the initial locations. And the first one means that the first infections occur at the low population density areas. And the red lines represent median, and the 10,000 represent the high. So we can easily to also say with if the first infections occur at that the low at the very high population density areas, it's relatively it's harder to control the disease outbreaks. And also, if we continue to increase these containment areas, the disease control efficiency also decreases. And you can also learn similar ideas from the spatial perspectives. So the color and the height all represent the number of infections from the simulation results. And we can also say if we continue to increase these containment areas, and control efficiencies really decreases, right? The high breaks, outbreaks. So the conclusion is that the population density at the source, really it's very important. It really matters. And the second one is that after we build these control frameworks, appropriate spatial and social skill can help us to achieve the best control efficiencies with a limited number of the vaccines. And also, this social control can help us geographically optimize the design of the control strategies, like the travel restriction before the pandemic outbreaks in urban areas. And so what's the significance of this approach? That the first one is that And the one institute from India, they are implementing this control approach in their field studies. And also that S3 also implement this approach, you know, in their software. And the last one is that also my goal is that with available data like Twitter, like all of those real-time data which can be used to estimate that the human movement patterns, so this approach can make it possible to design this real-time disease control approach. And so, thanks for everyone.
Questions?
If you go back to your different containment size, right there.
Yeah.
What does it mean by applying a containment? Do you mean that you don't treat anyone inside the containment area?
Only treat the people within.
Treat the people within
the containment areas.
So the bigger your containment area is, how come there's the more your disease outbreak becomes? I'm not getting it. Sorry.
Oh, I think the general idea is that if you can contain the disease, let me put it this way. Because here the disease transmitted from one individual to another, and if we can identify and appropriate the areas and then vaccinate the individuals within these areas, it's kind of you break that the disease transmission channels. Because if, let us say,
is it a timing problem? Is it that the larger treatment area takes longer to administer to all those people, and so you lose the race against the disease?
I think it's more like the, because they need the, theoretically, the disease transmit from one individual to another. So
let's say this. The bigger area you treat, the more costly it might be. But how come that the more people get sick? That doesn't make sense to me at all.
Oh, because you use a limited number of the vaccines. You use the same number of the vaccines to treat the...
Oh.
Yeah.
So you just randomly throw a few vaccines in a very large population.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, that doesn't make sense at all. Why would you do that ever?
What do you mean? Oh. Because
is that a realistic scenario? Is that in practice? You randomly vaccinate a few people in a big city?
Oh, it's the goal here is that, like say, if we use this approach, whether because of that's baseline like that. You know, we are going to vaccinate the persons, individuals within the whole population, and to say how effective you can control the disease outbreak. The goal here to say, can we identify some critical locations and then only target, use the same number of the vaccines, target as the peoples within those locations. They all use the same number of vaccines, but maybe they target at different individuals. How effectively this approach can achieve the similar goals. Use a little smaller number of the vaccines.
Then you have a very big assumption that you targeted the right location. If you target the wrong location,
that's
not gonna help you.
Yeah.
If your containment area is small.
Yeah,
okay.
That's a very good point. So that's why I propose to say, you know, assume, because in this case, we assume to say you may have the vaccines. and you have enough number of vaccines. But in some cases, if you only have limited numbers of vaccines, and then which locations which the target first, maybe can have the high probability to control the diseases. So in this case, we say it's based on the population movement, because originally they have no idea, you know, which, as I said, they can use the contact tracing and trace the individuals who have the contacts with the infections. As you said, it's very hard to know. Maybe you cannot have a big picture for that. And for the geographical, similar, as it also could be the problem, as you mentioned, that if you only target the small areas and some other locations may have the more interactions with this location, you will miss that. So the here is try to, based on the human movement patterns, we can propose this approach to say, again, we cannot say 100%, but at least they can, based on simulations, it can increase like the 20% or 30%. That's the kind of this goal.
So your effectiveness is all proven by simulation. It's not proven by real case.
Yeah. But as I mentioned, that is people from the public health Indian, they kind of now it's implement this in their kind of field of studies to say.
Can you go show the slide again that showed the total population and social connections of Portland? Yeah, exactly. So
the goal here, like there's no, if we have enough vaccines, we just vaccine all the population, so there's no problem. So the problem, the target here is that is, let us say if we can use this approach to just the goal is to use the less number of the vaccines as much as possible. That's the optimized sense, yeah.
How is the total contact calculated?
Oh, just for example, if we both have the...
Where does the data come from?
Oh, this data is here. It's a simulated data. I simulated all of the population within this Portland their movement, their interactions. They definitely have a lot of assumptions, no doubt about that.
So it's just daily human movement pattern?
Exactly,
is it,
daily, And
is it adjusted to the demographic makeup of the city or the economic flow, or is that?
Yeah, I think they definitely involve a lot, like the demographics, land use, and also the travel survey, all of those, together and then simulate how, definitely also have assumption to say, hey, if this person is, they may assume like if this person within the family, they assume there's a full network, full contact network, right? And within the workplace, they maybe assume that partial contact network.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the locations, are those synthetic as well, or is the total locations, is that generated from the population and contacts?
Yeah, I think that's I think that's where be the relative real ones. Like for example, if you have the census tract, and then you can assume to say they here have maybe 100 families or something like that, and then you assign their locations, and also also use some remote sensing to gather information and then assign the individuals to the different locations.
So in this sphere,
What
does each point represent?
Oh, here represent the locations, but the locations have different categories, like the home, work, shop.
So this means each individual?
No, this is the locations. In each locations, they also have a lot of the individuals.
Okay, so in each point.
Yeah.
Okay, you have another data set.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, each.
Could Can you go to the slide where you have the trace and then you've got the treatment region area? Yeah,
this
that
one.
Slide there. So
yeah.
Traditionally, your proposal is in relation to a standard approach. The standard approach is you find out who's infected, which is tricky, I guess, right? I mean,
so sorry.
But let's say you find out who's infected, so you get hear about cases in a hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you go and talk to those people.
Yeah.
And you find out who they've been
yeah,
in touch with.
That's the yeah.
And then you go, maybe just one level out.
Yeah.
Right. Because it gets exponential, really. Right.
Yeah.
So you go one level out and you talk to the people who those people.
Yeah.
Talk to.
Yeah.
Right. And then they. Okay. So, that's how you do your tracing.
Yeah, that's traditional.
That's
a public how public health official.
Right? And then you go and you try to. You might go and inoculate or give vaccines to the people who are in contact with this person.
Yeah.
Right. And that would be pretty efficient, given. Well, I mean, it's efficient. It's as efficient as you can make it, maybe. But you're saying, okay, take that idea, but then put a geographic boundary around the individual who got sick and the people they immediately were in contact with. That's your small green circle, right?
Small, yeah.
Your small green circle,
yeah.
That's
a
geographic boundary.
Yeah, geographic location, let us say, yeah.
And the idea is then you're drawing a line there and you're going to actually randomly target the broad population within that green circle?
No.
No.
That's the last step. Hold on. This is the how ring prophylaxis, another approach, current approach, do.
Okay.
You know, after I identify the several locations based on their geographic distance.
Right.
And then random.
Do them. So this is what you're proposing with the geosocial is not this.
Yeah, it's identify the location first, but this location is based on that how different locations interact with each other based on population flow.
So you're enhancing the trace approach, but you're not putting sort of a boundary down and then trying to treat everybody in it.
That's just the next step to test.
You
know what I mean? Because when you assume distribute approach may be the similar, but there are many. These are for this the simulations. You can do different ways, right? Simulate.
So in practice, you find out from people. How do you apply your approach in practice?
I think the I think the realistic ones, as I mentioned, that you can there's many in practice. It's just the different ways to say, because the current approach, they can say, okay, I identify the distance from that first infection
right.
cases, and
right.
And in this case, it's a similar approach. To based on a lot of data, we can, as I said, based on this human movement data, we can estimate how different locations in the city are connected with each other, right? How strong, and then
okay.
And then we can say instead of to based on the geographic distance to targeted locations, we can use this new approach to target those locations and individuals.
Basically, human flow knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
To do better than the ring approach.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you say that Esri and India apply this, can you explain what they apply and how they apply on what?
This ones I talked to when they read my Indians ones when they read my paper. And then we have a phone call, and then they implement this approach in their own tool, and also they talk to me because they have the different the village, in some towns, in some maybe cities, something like that. So they try to use this approach to say similar target at the those different villages to based on the population flows, and for this ones because Michael Guchel
heard my talk, and then he just read the email to S3 to say, you know, this is a new approach and something like that. And he told me that the S3 just implement this approach in their software. And he asked him the detail. He said he also do not have enough detail, but he just have the follow-up with S3. S3 told him that they already implemented in their software, but we don't know yet.
One more question. So what does a human movement data set look like? I assume that in both of these systems, one of the new inputs is a human, is some kind of picture of human movement.
Yeah.
Is that a bunch of points with vectors between them, directional vectors? How does that, where does that come from, and how is it, what's the data structure? I'm just very curious.
You can think about like the Twitter data.
Yeah.
And this person is here, tweet,
right.
And then they go there, tweet.
Yeah.
So the data structure is just like that.
A
network.
It's a bunch of points, and
points.
It's the same ID, it's the same person, and that's the direction
you're
going.
Yeah.
It's over time. Each one is time and ID.
True. But again, that's the, there's definitely a lot of challenge to say how we really implement the practice, but at least for the theoretical simulations, it kind of improves.
Right.
But also from the theoretical perspective, it make more, I think, a little bit more practical, I think, and then let's say contact tracing at least, right? Ring prophylaxis is easier, we just kind of draw a circle, right? Contact tracing, it's also a challenge to say how could you trace all of the individuals. Here, at least from a theoretical perspective, and it's relatively easier, at least, to target at the locations, right, based on how humans interact within different population flow among different locations, right? So it's, I also agree there are, you know, challenges here, but small step to, you know, to make it at least more practical, I think. Right.
So can I see the slide of methodology? Yes. So I also have a similar question with Ben.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about human movement data.
Yeah.
So you said, I'm wondering, it seems you had a lot of computing.
Yeah.
So I think depending on the resolution or quality of human movement data.
Yeah.
So how is the resolution, temporal or spatial resolution of human data? Is it individual?
Individual.
How is the time step?
Yeah, this is a time step. Is they have the three different time steps. It's a 1 day since, actually, 2 days. Time step is for 1 day, they have three different time periods. That's the daytime, after work, and nighttime. Yeah.
Then each individual.
Yeah.
So this means total 1.6 million points.
Yeah.
And how long is the total duration of the analysis? How is the total period of the analysis?
And actually, the here has assumption to say that everyone just have the same routine every day, let's say, right? And then for the simulation part, we may simulate for a disease simulation, we simulated like the 90 days, something like that. Yeah, the how disease outbreak. Yeah, also this has some challenge to say, people will say, you know, during the, especially like after natural disasters, you know, human movement will change, right? You cannot say you assume that it's still the same network, the same connections, all of those things. But at least from another perspective, you know, even after natural disasters, like we also have, you know, some data, like the even Twitter data, all of those data can be still be used to estimate you know, the population flows among different locations, right? So yeah, but again, definitely if you say the, especially as you mentioned, the very high spatial details resolutions definitely involves a lot of challenge because human behaviors is very hard to predict, especially after some events, they may change. Yeah, this is a kind of very common challenge for the agent-based modeling. It's true, yeah, I don't deny that.
So in the population, so what's the ages distribution?
Yeah, they have different age.
Okay.
Yeah, but here I think I do not, I do not consider the susceptibility for different age. Well, I assume everyone has a similar, you know, infection rate. I didn't, yeah. But yeah, they have the data have the different age. So yeah, some other papers also, you know, gave different, for people with different age have the different, you know, susceptible to the diseases.
At the very beginning, you introduced a few platforms
yeah.
you developed.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little more on the tools and the technology behind for those visualization platforms?
Sure. This one use Java, just a language. Oh, yeah. This is use Java to implement those, and.
Is there a database behind?
Database? No. This one, this. This do not have those tools. I don't think have very large data sets. You know, only the last one may have very large data sets. You do not need a database, and just you know CSV file. I think is enough, and a shapefile, not CSV.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is Java based, and so this is also Java based, and this is JavaScript based. And this is also JavaScript and React. Yeah. This is R. We use R. And this also use R. Yeah. Yeah.
And for the platform that you use to analyze the uncertainty of the global change assessment model.
Yeah.
Do you also use that to? To assess the uncertainty of other models, or how do you evaluate the uncertainty of this kind of model with this tool?
Yeah, this is also tricky to be honest with you. And here is what we implement this kind of hierarchical approach, and each here represents different scenarios. Actually, and then we after we use this hierarchical approach, we say okay, this is two different scenarios, and then we go to here to say okay, the difference between these two scenarios is a water project. So this water project is that the China Nanshui Beidiao. It's in China we have the big. Because the dry in the north part, right? We propose that to transport the water from the south to the north, right? So these models is try to integrate that scenarios into this global assessment model to understand how this big project in China to transport the water from the south to the north. Impact the world climate change in the future 100 years or something like that. So this one's to shows us after we apply those different clustering approach, we found okay, this the difference between these two scenarios is a water project with why it has turned this water project on, the other does not have to turn this project on. And then we go to the high level, and this is a population change. So means this group of the scenario and this group of scenarios have the difference about the population. So because we assume in the future, and the total population in the world will you know increase like the 15%, 20%, all of those things, and So this is the precipitation. So we assume in the future, you know, it's a dry or wet, or something like that. And the last one is that emissions, and so the CO2 emissions. So based on our cluster approach, we can easily to say, okay, which kind of parameters has a larger impact on the your prediction results, your future prediction results. So this is a one way. We have different ways. This is one way to say how to understand how your different inputs can impact your outputs.
Did
you
use the sensitivity analysis?
Yeah, we also use the sensitivity. Yeah, it's in our paper. I do not put here. Yeah, we use last step is the sensitivity analysis to say if we change the change that to the again also change the. This is just an original input, but if we change the input, so how it will change this? Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Thank you.
Okay. Any more questions? All right. Well, thanks again. Very interesting.
Thanks.